Accession number 20144, Reel 6.
Tomgar, Reel 6.
We moved back into a barn and it was full of cows. And we slept on the straw in the middle of the aisle of the cows. Luckily, their tails and the smell was the other end, and we had a good night's sleep. The next morning, Sergeant Rose went to all group and come back. We fell in on the road Sambatoon. There was an anti-tank gun that was doing a lot of damage, and we were to attack it. The orders was that when we made contact, some section would move up the ditch and attack it with cover and fire from the other sections. Now, some section had drawn the short straw on this one. So we started to move off, and thankfully it was cancelled. So we lived to fight another day. We moved back into some German dugouts around the farm with plenty of chicken there. And we cooked a chicken over open fires. Wonder we didn't poison ourselves. Or if we did, the skin got burnt, but the actual flesh. My things at a butcher come in handy again. We used to baste them with the fat. And we had a lung sticking them with a man on each end holding them over the fire. And the sergeant major had us on parade. And he made a very good remark, which I always remember. The chicken are conspicuous by their absence, he said. We'd cook a lot. They were lovely chicken too. They were all earmarked, you know, all in their combs had a mark in the test of chicken. We had a company concert there, funny enough. And a Major Nuttall from B Company, from another company, I always remember, he sang Trees. And it went down very sentimentally with us. The next day, the company commander sent for me. And they had had a letter from my local vicar that Father had seen, because I hadn't wrote home lately. I was absent without leave, and of course I hadn't wrote during the attack, and that we've been so busy. And he showed me a letter he had wrote home and told me to write and that sort of thing. And they took my badge off me when I was absent without leave, when I was doing field punishment. And I never had a badge, so he rubbed it in his pack and gave me a badge. And he said to me, "I hope you wear that with pride." He said, "because that was Corporal Jackman's. And Corporal Jackman had been shot right next to me." And I still got that badge. And that's Corporal Jackman's. When I go on Armistice Parade, I wear that one. We moved off the next day on transport and then on tanks. We rode on tanks. Dismounted from the tanks and advanced across fields. It was raining. Across to a big railway line with a tunnel underneath. We went under the tunnel and dug in around the other side. And the anti-tank guns coming around there as well, the support company, and dug in behind us. After we dug in, three of us had to go on patrol to the farm houses in front, half a mile, three quarters of a mile in front, to see if they were occupied. So Corporal Topham, myself and another rifleman, set off up the edge. As we went up, there was a road crossing our front and an army jeep one of our jeeps went along it. And all of a sudden a shell landed in front of it. And the two occupants got out, and the next shell hit the jeep and blew it to pieces. Now this told us that it was a tank firing at it. Because from experience, that had been at a straight hit instead of the overhead wine coming in. So we moved up the edge with caution. We went in the first house, and there was a load of civilians in the cellar, all shapes and sizes. Must have been about 15 of them there. We had a little chat to them in sign language, etc. And we decided not to go any further because it was pushing our luck. So we moved back down the edge, and all of a sudden our anti-tank guns opened up, like whips crashing over your head. And they had hit a tank that was about 3 or 4 houses from us in a yard. They blew up a tank. So it was a good job that we never went any further. Come nightfall, we all moved back behind the railway line. And we were joined by three crocodile tanks. Crocodile tanks are flamethrowers. As it got dark, we moved back through the tunnel, spread out, and advanced on these farmhouses. And all of a sudden, the three tanks opened up with their flames. And their flames must reach 400 or 500 yards in front, easy out. Lit up the night. There's like three firemen hoses, but there's flames. Burnt everything in front of them. They stopped and we moved on and went around the far side of the village, which was mostly burning. Dug in for the night. The next day, we opened fire on the enemy in the woods across from us. And a battalion of Gordon Islanders went through us, and we watched them attack the woods. We were spectators. So we were beyond the line a bit then, so we went to explore. Went in the first barn, and there was rows and rows of cattle all burnt in their stalls, just like chicken, all cooked. Now, we never went no further. We sinned enough. But my mind, I wonder what happened to those civilians that were down in that cellar when we'd done that patrol. So this is something you can't think about now. This is it. This war. And we moved back on our tanks. Then we'd done a fair march with bagpipes, and we moved in some barns with a comfortable night and straw, and our blanket rolls had arrived. The next morning, early, there was a panic on. We were dashed out to our tanks. Found our tanks. They were still brewing their breakfast. Now two out of the three of these tanks was eating their last meal on earth. Because two of them was knocked out with all the crews. In about 3 hours' time from when we left. We got on our tanks and moved out to the road. But the road was blocked with transport. So we raced across the fields, got off our tanks beyond a wall, we took refuge beyond a wall, and we had to attack a woods up in front of us, which had been an officer's training school, they told us. So they must have been keen soldiers, and opposition would be fairly heavy. So we moved up the road with a tank each. No, the three tanks went up the road. Firing, and we went on the sides, a platoon on each side, with a platoon beyond the tanks. And we reached the woods, climbed over a fence, and a Spando machine gun opened up on us. There was it in the trees, so we hid beyond the trees. We were virtually pinned down. And then a Bren gun of ours, that was in the other section, on the left, opened fire on them, so we took advantage and moved back. and we went over that fence that we had been a laborious crawling for us. We went over there like a whippet jumping the fence. We went around the corner, and there was these two big plumes of smoke. Two of the tanks had been knocked out. And casualties were being, on the road they caught the worst of it. Casualties were being evacuated, and a few prisoners. We dug in a little bit further up from the tanks, and some Germans come out of the wood and give themselves up, probably the ones that have been fired on us. The next day, next morning, a scout car come up to the tanks and pulled the bodies of the men out. All the crew was in there. They pulled them out, put them in blankets, and put them on top of the scout car and took them back. Another sort of picture took in your mind that you can always remember, because they had a job to get the burnt bodies out because they were in a sitting position and that sort of thing. You had to straighten them out. You couldn't help but watch them because you were dug in so close to them. We moved back and on the tanks, and the tanks stopped, and there was a sign to Berlin, and a load of Americans went past us, masses of them, tanks, infantry in trucks and riding, and they were on their way to Berlin, but they never got there, of course, because the Russians got there first. Then we went into what they call the Bashan-On period, or I call it the Bashan-On period. We rode on all sorts of transport, right up through Germany. There was officers, RTO officers, pretty on the, even running on the guns, anything that transport. Then they drop you off at a certain point, feed you, and then you'd be on again. Probably riding on tanks. We went through Celle. And on the outskirts of Celle was the big concentration camps with the black and white stripe skeletons beyond the fences. Nothing to do with us. We had to bash on. We had several instances in the bashing on period. Once we stopped dugging around a factory that was a smoking pipe factory. And there was hundreds of new smoking pipes. So a battalion of the Gordon Islanders went through us, Glasgow Islanders, and we gave them all a new pipe each after we took our own. And we dug in, another time we dug in somebody's, a beautiful house, all the lawns was laid out, and we dug in these front garden, great big pits. We always dug in, not to be caught with our trousers down. And in the morning, the owner come out and asked us in his language if we were going to fill the pits in. So we put him in the pit, made it to fill it in. A little bit callous as I think about it now, but it was the things you did when you were younger, I suppose. And we used to go into the houses, and there was loads of preserved food in the cellar, all sorts of fruits. And I always remember the gherkins. The pickled gherkins were beautiful. I've never tasted a gherkin like it since. Now we bashed on, as we all call it, and then it started to harden up again. The opposition started harden up. It started, we never seen no enemy, but we were dug in the night around a farm, and on the end of the farm was a toilet, convenient toilet. Rifleman Gorton, I remember, went in there, he was going in and he lit a cigarette. Instead of waiting until he went inside, he lit a cigarette. And they sent a bazooka or a rocket over and burnt the house down. And we'd never seen them, but they were there, you see. The next big attack we went through, so... The next thing was Mr. Young, our officer. The next attack, where they started tightening up the attack. We attacked a village. I was a section leader then. I hadn't been made up to Lance Corporal then, but I was leading the section. And we went up a built up road, and he come up to talk to me, turned his head to say something to me, and a shell landed. And the next thing I knew, we were both in the ditch, lying beside each other. He had a Mr. Young, he was a good officer. He only joined us about 3 weeks before. He would not wear a steel helmet. He would wear his bonnet with his big Cameroonian badging. And he had a slice of shrapnel right across his head. And shrapnel in the backs of his hands. And I thought to myself, well, he's a candidate for the gas cap. Pretty gas cap. And all of a sudden he groaned. Just to say I'm alive. And I thought to myself, well, I better go and look for help. Because I put a field dressing on his head. But it was too small. And another company started coming up up the side of the road. And the officer recognised him and put him on a stretcher and sent him back. And he survived. He wrote to us after the war. And said he was recovering. Now we dug in there. And a squadron of about 5 planes flew overhead. Obviously we thought they were British. Waving to them. And one of them peeled off. Too late, we seen the German marks on the side. One of them peeled off and started machine gunning us. So we all got in our slit trenches. And the people behind us caught it more than we did. And then he circled again and dropped a bomb on the village. And there was a big plume of smoke. So we didn't do very well in waving to them. We dug in for the night. Really fixed ourselves up. We were getting used to digging in now. We ripped a door off somebody's front room and covered half the trench or sleeping trench. Just settling in for the night. Fell in. We fell in on the road. Moved back down the road and the 6th Airborne Division was going through us. We just passed them. They were infantry. They never had nothing to say. We never used to talk a lot. Just listen for in case a shell was coming or something like that. We moved on through the night, and then someone jumped down in front of us. It was our guide, and he took us through to the outskirts of Yosen. And that was the last defending town this side of the River Elbe. So we moved into a house with a big barn on the end, and we stood patrol up to the barn, and you could see the enemy across the road, dug in. So we used to, they weren't doing us no harm, so we didn't do them no harm. And we used to do a patrol up to the front of the house and then come back in the next section and do a patrol. So they sent a sniper up from headquarters. I could tell you how close we was, because snipers are always close. The next section that went up, the sniper went up with them and started sniping. And of course they burnt the house down. So we had to evacuate the house. And we moved back into the nearest building. That was a chapel. And we stayed the night in this chapel. And there was many a prayer said in that chapel on a quiet, I think, of these big, strong soldiers. Next morning, old group, we were given another 4 bombs each. Two more grenades, so we had 6 bombs. So we were going into Yosen and bomb our way in there. We had 4 grenade Mills bombs and 2 phosphorus bombs. So we moved off up the road, no artillery support. My section leading. Corporal Grant had gone on leave, by the way. His leave had come up. And we got to a road, and the sergeant said, take him across there. He called me Tom, actually. We were quite friends. And something I had learned at battle school was never to hang around when you're crossing a gap. I had learned at battle school, these little things. So we dashed across. The next section opened up with their Bren gun. The Germans was pulling out up the road. And he fired on them with the next section's Bren gun. And they must have been doing a lot of damage because they fired back with a... Could have been a SP gun, a special support gun or anything. And they had 3 or 4 casualties. So the second section called it there again, you see. We moved on. Another one was these here young boys that just joined us, or have been with us now since arriving. We moved on into a farmhouse and a building again on the outskirts, in front of a big like garden allotments, and with a railway line up across the front, and a Spando machine gun firing on us. A section went out to clear up the line and they got fired on with the Spando. So we sent over some mortar bombs and smoke, and got this section got back without a casualty. We moved over in the building, and the sergeant said, told me to take the section across. It must have been about a 100-yard dash. So there again, what I learned at battle school, I said to them, when I say go, we all go at once. And all of a sudden I said go, and we dashed across there and finished up an heap on the other side. The next section that come across, they come across slower and they had casualties. So there again, something I'd learned at battle school. We went through Yosin, went up the road bombing our way through. We dug a hole in the terrace of houses to get through with a pick. And we got through pretty quick, taking turns on the pick. Dropped a grenade down through the stairways. Dashed down. And there was a light coming from the cellar. So I was short on hand grenades. So I fired a burst of Sten gun and dashed down the cellar on my own. And there staring at me was 15 to 20 children and two nuns. And there was a big cross, had a crucifix hung up on the middle post. Bucket of water and the lado there, I remember it. And my mouth went really dry. That's a nurse for the home. And the two nuns and these 15 children. And it was very quiet. Thank goodness I'd run out of bombs, or was tight on bombs, and never threw the bomb down, because I'd have never lived it down else with all these children and the two nuns in there. Now, there wasn't any civilians in that part of the town. Why they hadn't been evacuated, I don't know. I said to the nun, "Nix soldiers, nix rifles." We used to ask them. "Nay, nay," she said. And I thought, "What shall I do?" And I said, my mouth was dry as a chip. And I said, "Good Vassar?" And she said, "Yeah, yeah." So I took two tippers of water. I took off my steel helmet so that I suppose not to frighten the kids. I don't know why I took it off. Put my steel helmet back on my head and left. I had to catch up with the rest of the section. I couldn't stay there and look after them because I'd have been absent without leave again. But you had to make these split decisions when you're in battle. If it's right or if it's wrong, you've just had to do it, got to do it. So I left them. So I hope, in hindsight, the troops that come behind us would have probably looked after them. But there's nothing I could do for them. But the kids never said a word. They were just staring at me. The bullets I fired had hit a wall on the bottom of the cellar, about a foot from the nearest child. So, you know, in hindsight, if I had thrown a bomb, dear, dear, dear. We pushed on to a bungalow, entering through the front window. All the glass was out and the windows were blown out of most of these places. One of my sections said he think there was a jerry in the backyard hiding behind a mound. So I put my Sten gun aimed from inside the window. You never stick your head out with a Sten gun like they do in the films, you know, you keep back and fire. I was just about to fire a burst to make sure when there's an explosion in the front room. One of our other sections has thrown a phosphorus bomb in. And luckily there was only two of our section in there. So we all piled out through the windows like doing a parachute roll on the ground, which we'd never been learnt, with all our equipment. One of the men had his clothes were still, up his arm was still burning with the phosphorus. So we tipped our water out, our water bottles, and put it out for him. And the rifleman Armstrong, was, I had a word with the master that threw the bomb. And he said, "You're lucky," he said. Because he told the same tale as me with the children and the thing. He said, "I was nearly out of Mills bombs," he said, "so I thought I'd throw a phosphorus bomb, which didn't explode, just caught fire," you see, these phosphorus bombs. So it was sort of tit for tat. We pushed on through Yosin. We went up through Yosin with our tanks, through the main station square. And there was a dead body of a civilian laying in the road. And the tanks were swerving to miss it. So we caught over his legs and pulled him across the road and put him in the gutter. And there was a blue-reddish mark, a skid mark of blood right across the road. And there were civilians was coming into it. Now there was quite a few civilians up in the railway station. We moved on through Yosin. Went around a corner and there was two really great Panther tanks there with the black marks on the side, camouflaged. One of the engines was running and their guns was pointing right at us. So we made AC retreat, backed in some empty shops, deciding what to do if they come around the corner. And a white flag came out around the corner and it was an escaped prisoner of war. And he told us that the crews of the tanks had just abandoned the tanks and run up the road. So luck was with us again. So we passed these here still, the engine was still, the exhaust was still coming out of the engine. The biggest tanks I've ever seen, it was Panthers, I think. It was Panthers, because I've seen a Panther up the Imperial War Museum, and it's the same thing. And we went on, and there was a school with a wire fence around, great big wire fence, and turned out to be full of British prisoners of war. Now, when you see prisoners of war freed, they're always cheering and shouting, joyful. But there was no joy with these here prisoners. They seemed sort of dumbfounded or something. I don't know what it was. I suppose it was a shock that they had been freed or something. But we did ask after a while, they come around and asked us what part of the country that we come from. But we couldn't hang around. Of course, we never hung around. We always had to keep bashing on. And we dug in at the corner of a big plain field in front. Down in front of us, there were some civilians in a terrace of houses. So myself and two others went down to see if there was any cherries about down there. And we asked our usual question of the civilians. They were just staring at us, wondering what we were going to do. Nick sold that Nick's pistol. That was about nearly all the German we knew. And to my amazement, an old man pointed up in the house, up the stairs. So we went up with precaution. And there was a German officer having a shave. His Luger pistol was on the table with three clips of ammunition, which I picked up and shoved in my belt in my pocket. And he said in English, "Can I finish my shave?" And we must have been in a good mood because we sat there and didn't finish his shave. And then he put on his black uniform and his shiny boots. He was obviously not a frontline soldier. He had a briefcase, which we searched. And he marched up the road with us into captivity. I never knew the German ranks, but I think he must have been a fairly high-ranking officer. But he made sure he was clean and smart before he was captured. We moved on from Yosin to the banks of the River Elbe. We had a day, I was promoted Lance Corporal then. I never pushed for a promotion, but it sort of made up for those days I was absent, without leave. Told me something, I don't know what it told me. But I was Lance Corporal then. And the police sergeant sent me. And he said, "However do you do it," he said.